Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone. Let me try that again. Welcome to the 200th episode of Jabber and the Drone. The... Fuck my life.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm a man of routine. This is how I do this.
Do you want me to do it?
Nope, I got this.
Welcome to the 200th episode of The Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely agrees to disagree.
Yeah, and that's where you already fucked it up. Okay, so this is it. Q&A. We had a few different listeners send us questions, some solicited by myself, and others came in more organically. But let's go ahead and start with the questions that came from Facebook, and I'm getting to that. You don't have to vamp.
We weren't going to. Nobody was vamping.
I feel like now we
don't need to vamp. Don't you dare vamp. Okay, here we go. All right, so this comes from a friend of the show, Hillary, and she wants to know, I'm gonna start with this one. So, okay, here's one for both of you, or all of us. What's the one thing you're currently obsessed with? Song, band, movie, food, comic, imaginary friends, etc. I'm glad you asked, Hillary, because besides being totally immersed in the Alien universes last week, I've been totally immersed in the YouTube series Hot Ones, an interview show where celebrities and rappers and actors and comedians try to answer questions while eating increasingly hotter chicken wings. And it is the best thing on YouTube, and it's made my life better.
I like that one. I watch it, too.
I only watched the one with TJ Miller, and I was just
watch
like,
them all.
They're all like, there's quite a few that are pretty good. My favorite is when they have professional chefs on, because
they talk about the food.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it becomes more interesting and like almost. Yeah. Anyways, let's see. What am I? I'm obsessed with everything all the time. Let's see. Band wise, I listen to a lot of Messengers and the Damned right now. TV show wise, I've been watching a lot of Black Sails. I don't get to watch much movies. I'm pretty obsessed with my baby child. And that's all I get to do with my life. So there. That's
all
it.
Right.
All right. What am I obsessed with right now?
Watching a show?
I mean, what?
Are you watching a show right now?
I mean, I'm always watching like 5 shows. Silicon Valley is really good this season.
Mm-hmm. I've liked most of those seasons. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like that show a lot. The Leftovers is wrapping up. I enjoy it, even though it's super weird. I mean, anything on HBO, I'm pretty much watching right now.
That's a very dour show, and you really have to, like, for me anyways, I had to watch that with, like every time I watch that, I feel like the world's collapsing.
Oh, holy shit, it does not get better.
Yeah, it's depressing as fuck. We haven't watched the third season yet. So
doesn't
I'm
help.
That's okay. I'm okay with that, because that's what the show is about.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I should say Black Sails is a pirate show. It's pretty pulpy. There's boobies, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a Game of Thrones ripoff, but it's really fun.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer for it, I think at a theater, actually, like before the real trailers. Mm. And Hillary wants to know if we're eating enough vegetables. I am definitely not. How about you guys?
I do all right. I do all right.
I do at least one a day. With at least at one meal. Usually it's our biggest portion.
I don't.
Too. We're adults. All right.
I don't do one a day, but I do. Oh. I eat them when they come up.
Do you like vegetables, Cassidy? Do you like
them? Yeah, I actually don't mind them. Sometimes at work I'll get the steamed vegetables with my whatever, or I'll get a salad. But generally speaking, if we're talking about enough, it's probably definitely not enough. Okay, Ashley Hitchcock, friend of the show, she's been on here before. She wanted to know what our top five television shows were, and then she wants to hear my Sundance poop story. Do you want me to tell my Sundance poop story while you guys are thinking about your top five television shows?
Oh, I prepared for this. Oh. I read that, and I was like, I don't know. And I just thought about it, and I came up with four really easy, and one it took me a long time to do.
Like of all time?
I guess so, yeah.
Of all time, yeah. And it says best. Okay. I took it as my favorite shows,
yeah, favorite,
and
not the best shows. Whatever. Okay, what about you, Keith? Do you need my poop story?
Yeah, tell your poop story.
Okay, this is a little bit of a confession, I should say. I don't know if I've told anybody this.
Well, we're about to hear it.
In 2008, me and Cade went to the Sundance Film Festival, the only time I've ever been. Because we live close enough to it, we thought, why don't we go to the Sundance Film Festival? So we did, completely unprepared, and didn't buy tickets in advance. So we went to the Sundance Film Festival, and we had to go to bed at like 11 o'clock, sleep on our friend Mike Manning's dorm room floor, and then wake up 3 hours later. Literally, we had about 3 to 4 hours of sleep every night to go stand in line at the Tower Theater to get whatever tickets were available. By the time you get there at 4 in the morning, there's already people lined up. And this was 2008. I can't imagine what it's like now. Maybe they have fast passes. I don't know. But we went and saw a few movies. That's where I saw Time Crimes. That's where I saw...
Good one.
I don't remember. Other movies. But there was this one movie we were supposed to see called Smart People, which was an Ellen Page, Dennis Quaid joint. And it was one of the bigger movies that was premiering there because there was a lot of star power in it. And we were all supposed to go, and we were standing in a reserve line, and we finally got tickets. We finally were able to get into the showing at the Eccles Theater, which is the biggest theater they have. When we got there, this is so embarrassing, and it really makes me look like an asshole.
Well, you know. Go on.
I just want to say in advance, this story has less to do with me being a racist and more to do with me being...
I'm really not trying to bust this. I'm sorry. Go on.
And more with me being just insanely paranoid and sleep deprived. So we went there, and there was... I don't know how to say this gracefully. There was people of Arab descent who were sitting in front of us, and... They had big duffel bags. This is 2008, so we're a little fresher off of, like, you know, post-terrorism stuff. And I thought, and in my head, it seemed legitimate at the time. It's like, well, this is like the biggest like film festival of the world, and this is the biggest theater, and this is a huge showing, and the stars are going to be here, These duffel bags. And so I freaked out. And I told Cade, who was sitting there already, I have to go use the bathroom. At which point I ran out of the theater, and I didn't know what to do, so I hopped on a bus, a shuttle that was going around dropping off people to all the different theaters.
Rode
the shuttle for an hour and a half or 2 hours till they got out. At the time, I was also trying to text them frantically, saying stuff like, "I saw suspicious people. You should probably leave." And then when they didn't die,
making America great again.
when they didn't die, because I'm an asshole and I'm crazy, I told them that I was joking, and it was because I had to use a bathroom and they wouldn't let me back in. So that's the story.
Oh, I love you. So you didn't poop your pants at all.
No,
I love you, Cassidy. I love you so much.
So to me, the fucked up thing about this story is not your racial profiling, because I mean. It happens. It's unfortunate, but it does happen. We're human, and we are conditioned to fear. And when we are fed terror 24/7 on the news, it's bound to seep into your psyche. It sucks, but it does. What's really fucked up is that you just left your friends to die.
No, see, I.
You were scared enough to leave the fucking theater.
That's but always been his narrative, though. Always. He's always said in a zombie, any kind of outbreak, I'd be the first to die, and I couldn't help anybody. He's always been that way. He's always said it. And so to me, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it said that if a real zombie apocalypse were to happen, I would just try to get killed really quickly. So
It's taken 200 episodes, but I finally finished my job on this podcast to prove that you're racist.
Well, this actually kind of goes back. This is sort of a thing with me and Keith on the podcast. So this I think we're even now, right?
I guess. Yeah.
Oh, do you also have
I was trying to make Keith out to be racist, which you should go back and listen to our Aladdin fan casting episode.
Everything.
Okay, so okay, so top five television shows. I thought about this a little bit. This is sort of off the top of my head, but I'm going to say 6 Feet Under, the Batman animated television series. From the 90s. Daria. This is getting a little bit more difficult now. Freaks and Geeks. I think one of the best single pieces. You asked a little while on Facebook what's something that's perfect. That one season of Freaks and Geeks is perfect. Just a shout out to something old, but I still think holds up surprisingly well. The Twilight Zone?
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Do you want to go, Richard? You have your list ready.
Sure. Now, I don't have a specific order. I don't believe in them. I've only ever done specific orders because Cassidy's made me.
That wasn't specific order either.
I know. I'm surprised. Okay. Firefly, also good one seasoner. It's had a big impact on me as a person. I love that show. Arrested Development. Still one of the funniest shows on the planet. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I've liked it all the way up until this, 12th season?
13, maybe?
Yeah. I love how dark and horrible it is. All the characters are. I think it's funny. And then 4 is Hannibal. Brian Fuller does amazing visual work for TV. It's a really weird slow burn, even, I would say. It starts out as a procedural, and then it slowly becomes this weird, dark relationship between Hannibal and, the other main character. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. I've heard good things.
I'm also a huge Thomas Harris, if it says Thomas Harris, I'll at least give it a shot. I think this is a great adaptation. It also, I think he did a good job in not trying to touch something like Science of Lambs and stuff like that. If you just watch it at first and you're like, this is a procedural TV show, you got to make it through all of it. And then this 5th spot, I had such a hard time. It was almost Deadwood. It was almost Freaks and Geeks. But what ended up winning was Archer. I'll watch it all the time. I think it's super hilarious. He's kind of the voice inside my head sometimes, I think.
It's a good choice.
I don't know what to say. It's I think it's pretty smart humor. I mean, obviously, even smart humor is dumb sometimes, but I think that it really invests you in the characters, even though he's also kind of a bad person. Apparently, I like bad people, is what this list has told me.
Okay. I'm going to go through these pretty quick. Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, Lost, Saturday Night Live, and The Venture Brothers.
All right, a lot of new TV.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch a lot of TV, I didn't watch a lot of TV before. I mean, I like all the shows you guys mentioned. But, Lost was about when I started to really get into TV shows. I didn't used to watch them.
You and the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I watched The Simpsons, and that was about it.
I thought Lost was fun. I think it inevitably lost its direction and just kind of became meandering and weird. But I really didn't care for the ending either. I mean, I thought it was pretty enjoyable, but Anyway, go on.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's nostalgia at this point, but I liked the whole ride.
That probably would be my argument for some of the stuff, yeah. Okay, these questions are from Winston Conrad, Professor Winston, as he's called by Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational.
Oh no.
He said, yeah, he sent them some pretty serious stuff here. So again, hot takes, guys. Okay, I feel as though the end of the importance of syndication, which would lead to shows being aired non-sequentially, along with the British model of limited series, has given us a television renaissance in shows that can now engage in long-form storytelling, shows such as Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, etc. Has the rise of the cinematic universe resulted in a comparable loss in the ability to engage in sophisticated storytelling in film? Has film's loss of containment resulted in incomplete stories in a mirror image of television's newfound ability to tell complete stories? Yes.
I also think it's...
Yes and no.
I think it comes down to also... We've talked about it a lot, too, about budgetary things. TV has been able to shore up that gap because now you have digital and you don't have to take as long. And with the TV kind of like how quick they have to put that actual thing together, it really gives them some time to really put something together. And with the movies, on the other hand, you've lost that. We talked about this so much beforehand. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you already know this, but that mid-budget movies are gone. And I think that's where a lot of the best TV actually fills in. And that's where most of the best movies,
I think to me, the biggest reason is, because the talent is flocking to TV.
The writers, the directors, like people like Fincher doing House of Cards.
I feel like they're TV's where they go to do their passion projects. They're movies are where they go to get their paycheck. So I think that's, to me, the biggest contributor. But yeah, absolutely.
But I think he's specifically talking about how the cinematic universe, how does that affect individual filmmaking or individual films and in the stories they tell. And I would agree that my problem with the cinematic universe as a catch-all for everything, like now that we have the Dark Universe coming up with the Universal's monsters and all that stuff, is what you end up having a lot of the time is films that are made to set up other films. So everything just kind of feels like a giant commercial for something else. Mm-hmm. And I say that I think it can be detrimental. But also, when you're talking about like comic books, that's kind of the world it always came from, is sequential storytelling and stories told in saga. So it kind of makes sense there. I just don't think it needs to be applied everywhere.
Agreed. Yeah, it's also been said, and it's not a novel idea, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kind of like the studio systems when musicals happen and stuff like that. I think it works for them for the most part. I think... It's not usually like the best parts, but for me, you know, the difference between now that you have this kind of gap shored up between TV and cinema, I think it's kind of like the difference between talking about a novel where you're getting to know your characters, building a relationship, you do deep plot work, versus movies are supposed to be more like short stories. You're supposed to be very elemental and, lots of style and really supposed to put you in the scene at the time. So I think that it just needs, cinema needs to find its place again.
I agree with all that, but I also think that I think it just makes it harder for good movies to get made, but I think they still can happen. Like this year has been great. We've had some great standalone movies over the past few years. Mad Max Fury Road, you could not see any of the other Mad Max movies and it totally holds up. Get Out totally stands on its own. It's not part of a cinematic horror movie universe. Logan is connected to the X-Men movies tangentially, but again, that movie stands completely on its own. I think anybody could see that movie, and if they have a vague understanding of what the X-Men are, they don't need to see the other movies. It'll help, but yeah. So I think there's a give and a take. I think, you know, the cream rises and the stuff that's good gets the attention. I just think it's harder for that stuff to get through now, and people have to be particularly passionate about a project for it to be quality.
Sure. Richard, this one's for you.
Oh, shit.
Don't you love us anymore?
No. What? Wait, who? I feel I'm that was a fastball. Is that a real question? Is that
that was
really
a real
question?
That was a question.
You're
busy. You got a life. You're doing adulting.
I do have
my
an
question
adult
to
life.
Them is what's wrong with me?
Oh, you have a question too.
Well, okay, Keith. Here's I do. I miss podcasting. I miss having conversations with Cassidy and with Keith. You know what? I really like doing it with both of you. It's kind of strange. And we sometimes talk over each other a lot, but I do like doing it. I actually don't miss standing in judgment of films every week. Last year was a fucking shit show, and there was a lot of bad movies, and it felt horrible most of the time. And I was like, this is money I could be spending better places. Again, I had a baby. It's the first year. I love my baby, and I spend as much time as I can.
All right. Keith, this one's for you. If we give it all to Gosling, won't it be terribly boring?
Oh.
It will.
Okay. So, that, I think, enters into a vague realm of space called the Omni-Gosling paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know what? Yeah. If we give it all to Gosling... It would be boring.
What about Gosling kissing Gosling?
Playing flutes.
Yeah. You just came, didn't you? I got you.
We're going to get that into the Blade Runner sequel, I'm sure. Okay, then this one's to me. Do you have a secret plan to convince Rod from the LPP that he's insane? If so, what purpose? This kind of goes back to this idea of Rod insisting that the intro to the show has always been agree to disagree, when it has always been disagree to agree. And I showed him the masthead on our website to show him that I typed that out even. If I ever said agree to disagree, it was because I wasn't thinking about it and I was just trying to move along so I didn't stumble on my speech. But I promise you, it has always been disagree to agree, because that's a saying. The other one is a slogan everyone uses all the time.
Well, agree to disagree.
And for the group, I have a theory that says that there is no such thing as spoilers. The principle is that a really good story should hold up more than anyone reading such viewing, and that as such, a story that depends upon surprise alone is relatively worthless. Please discuss. Okay, well, I mean, we spoiled the shit out of Alien Covenant, and probably all the other Alien movies, too, if you haven't seen them.
I fundamentally disagree with this. I absolutely believe there's spoilers.
I do, too.
And I do, yes... A movie should not hinge on the spoilers, and I do think there's a difference. I do think there's a difference between a plot twist and a reveal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm generally more drawn towards reveals versus plot twists.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like reveals are unveiled slowly through the course of the story. They're logical, but maybe not obvious.
They're based on character. Whereas
a plot twist literally turns the plot upside down and everything you think is up to that point has been a lie and a manipulation based on the writer and director's information they've given you so far. However, I like to enjoy things fresh. It's not because I don't know what's going to happen all the time. I've read a lot of stories. I've written some stuff. I've written some scripts. I have a pretty good understanding of plot structure. So a lot of times I'm able to figure out stories before they're done. Doesn't mean I want to know what's going to happen, because I do get surprised. So I do think a good story should hinge on the story. And that's what separates the movies we go back to versus the ones that we experience one time and we're like, oh, that blew my mind, and never watch again. But I do think that spoilers diminish the initial enjoyment of the story, and to me there's no point for them.
I would more or less agree with you. I think it's on a case-by-case basis, especially when it comes to reviewing. I think depending on, I don't know, a lot of times, you know, I just discussed this with a person on Reddit who wanted to know more about our podcast. If I think it's a movie most everyone has probably seen, like the latest Star Wars film or something like that, I'm going to be less precious about it. But in the case of something like a little small indie,
I just said a movie like Get Out should be experienced, yeah, fresh, without outside influence.
Right. Or even a movie like a Colossal, which we saw, or the movie Raw, which I really liked a lot. A lot of these little small movies, again, they're not plot twist heavy. Get Out has a couple, but it's
Raw isn't, but I mean, that's kind of a story that doesn't really, that hinges more on theme than it does on
character reveals,
character,
yeah,
or plot in general. I don't think the plot's even important to that movie. Anyways.
Yeah, and to some degrees, I would agree with that. But yeah, generally speaking, when I go into a story, I don't want to know everything that's going to happen, or there's kind of no point. You can enjoy the ride still, and there's certainly movies where that I saw, I think the first time I saw Usual Suspects, I knew the twist, and I knew the twist of Sixth Sense before seeing it, and I still enjoyed those movies.
I knew the twist of Sixth Sense, and I did not enjoy it. It literally spoiled the movie for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's a very good movie, but that's just me.
No, there's a crowd that doesn't.
It's not just you at all. Yeah.
With spoilers for me specifically, I go by case by case as well. If it comes to the actual podcasting and how you should talk about it, I think you should be careful just for other people's enjoyment. I think it's just polite. That being said, I spoil a lot because I don't think that it's like, for me, if you haven't seen the movie and you're not making your own prejudgments on it, it's hard to have a real conversation, and I want to have a real conversation, you know, as best as I can. So for me, spoilers, if you're listening to especially a review podcast or something like that, expect spoilers. But where I get pissed off is if when it's in headlines, when people are just haphazardly saying it, like at a party. It's a messy thing, and there's not like a thing. Mostly, I think it's just a polite, and it shouldn't be in headlines, and it shouldn't be something flippant. If it's something like Chinatown, and you've had 30 years to experience it, and you're a 30-year-old, if you don't know how the ending of that movie...
Keith never saw it, and it blew his mind.
It's still really great. So that kind of lends to your argument. So I don't think anybody's wrong per se in this. To me, it's just about being polite in a society where everyone's so interconnected.
Sure.
Especially where pop culture is such a huge part of our society. It's like, it's like just let people... I think part of it is like you want to share stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't thinking of it from a reviewing perspective. From a reviewing perspective, I agree with you guys. Like, it's hard to not talk about the story if we're talking about the story, you know? Mm-hmm. So I try not to, but...
Well, I think it depends on... Sometimes I don't spoil anything because I'm always more interested in the themes of a movie. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk about that and people are like, what the fuck is he talking about? But... But I think it's good to, I mean, especially depending on the thing, there are movies I wish that I could go back and not see the 50 different movies that made fun of it before I saw the actual
agreed
film.
See, some of the Mel Brooks stuff or whatever that did, you know, spoof and satire, some of it actually made things fonder for me. Like Simpsons is pretty notorious. Like a lot of those Treehouse of Horrors reference, you know, these horror movies. So when I watched them, it felt like I had a weird connection. It was like I knew an inside joke about that movie or whatever. So sometimes, and I don't know, maybe that's a little different than a spoiler. But that would...
I think that kind of goes under Richard's whole idea of, like, how long the movie's been out, and if it's a part of the cultural zeitgeist and whatever.
Yeah, like the Shining. Whenever I see it and the blood comes out of the elevator, I just hear Mr. Burns saying, usually the blood gets off on the third floor.
Okay, these are the questions from Patrick.
Patrick. I haven't seen you for so long, my buddy.
He says the same thing. He says, I miss you. How are you?
I'm
kind of covered that.
I'm lovely, thank you. I saw that you did a Neil Gaiman episode, and I'm of the impression that you did not like it, and it was kind of Richard bait to argue, and you're on, motherfucker. Neil Gaiman's great. Go on.
That was for Patrick, by the way.
Yes.
All right. I had a similar reaction. I listened to his episode about Judge Dredd, and I didn't disagree with the arguments he made, but I was also like, but it's so good.
Oh, man. These questions are like, what you're saying now are leading up to some of these questions. Okay, so for all of us, it says, after 200 episodes, do you still want to change the name of the show? I think this is actually more towards me. Yes, all the time. But I'm lazy, and the only reason I haven't thus yet, is I'm afraid if I go into Podbean and our hosting site and change the name of the show, it's going to change like how it pops up in everybody's feed, and maybe it just kicks it off their devices, and I don't want to do that. So if I did end up changing the name of the show, I'd A, have to come up with a name that was too good to not do, and B, I'd probably have a pretty long lead up to it. 5 episodes of, okay, guys, this is what's happening. Get your phone out. Change it now.
And from a marketing standpoint, it's bad, especially if you already have a pre-established thing. If you were going to do a whole new podcast with a very different premise, even if it was still film related, I think you could do it. But if you're doing the same old shtick, there's no real reason to.
I don't think it's that terrible. I'm all for.
From my perspective, I would change it every week because I like change. That's completely different. I have a movie podcast that has a name in my head that I want to do, but I would probably only be interested in it for like 30 episodes, and then I'd want to start a baseball podcast. I don't even like baseball, but I'd want to start one for 30 episodes, and then a history podcast.
That should just be your podcast.
I need to change the name every time, Keith. Don't you understand?
Just call it Richard Wally Presents, and then whatever.
Richard Wally talks about baseball. Okay.
There's a comedian that actually did that. Andy Daly did the Andy Daly pilot podcast or whatever, where each podcast was goofy comedy podcast, where each one was a different character hosting a different podcast. It was pretty fun.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Okay, the one thing I will say, though, if you Google Jabber and the Drone, we are definitely the first thing that comes up. So that's good.
That actually,
we got our Google game on. That's for sure.
I'm going to say that was another thing. The reason why I went with such a strange name is because something that's novel tends to stick around a little bit better. And it's easier to, as you said, Google and stuff like that. That was another reason.
I actually really like the name of the podcast. I've always liked it, but.
Good. Tell Cassidy that his ruminations, and there's nobody going to bomb the theater, Cassidy. Get over it.
I'm that band that always says like they hate the band name, but they've had it forever. They can't change it kind of thing.
Yeah, I know. It's a good, I understand why. And when you said that, it reminds you too much of like a zoo, whatever. Like
Zoo Radio Morning Hour.
Yeah, where it has a name and a name. That made sense to me. I'm so disconnected from radio that it didn't even occur.
It didn't at the time. Okay, Keith, this is one that's specifically to you.
Oh, yay.
How is teaching improv? I tried to explain this to my father. I tried to explain it. His response was, yes, but improv is supposed to be spontaneous. How can you teach this? So how can you teach it, for dad's sake? Also, you would be a great guest on Make Dad in the near future.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Hit me up. For sure. I think that'd be a lot of fun. So teaching improv, it's not like you're rehearsing a play. It's not like, because that's what people automatically assume because it's theatrical. It's more learning strategies on how to communicate with other players, so that you're better able to think on your feet and deal with, scenarios as they come up. So a lot of it is, I like to think of it as like running drills or working out or whatever. Like you're toning muscles, you're toning brain muscles so that when you're in an actual show, You're just better equipped to deal with the situation.
Right, right. So instead of just standing there when somebody says, "Now I'm a clown," you don't go, you know how to take the scene somewhere else.
Yeah, and just like, and how to create it as an art form. It's like painters, right? Painters don't just start painting. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to learn. Sure, some painters probably have intuition with it. It's the same with improv. Some people just are naturally good at it. But you have to have some sense of color theory. You have to have some sense of shape and you know, distance. In you're just training yourself to learn the vocabulary and to learn different techniques and different moves. It's more like a martial art.
Okay,
actually,
that's compared a lie. You've compared it to painting, to drills, to working uh-huh. out, and to martial arts.
No. Well, okay, but
what it's really like
it.
Is you got to go to BoJack Horseman season 3, and it's a cult, and all the little cultists they have to get on the same wavelength so they can all drink the Kool-Aid at the same time.
No, it has some pretty culty tendencies. I'd agree with that. The TV show You're the Worst on FX has a pretty funny B storyline where one of the characters learns improv. But if you want like a good idea of what it's actually like, the movie Don't Think Twice, pretty good representation of what doing improv is like.
It's on Netflix now. Okay, so this one's to me. It says, "Cassidy, you seem to have a nice work versus life balance. You will have these huge life events like car accidents, getting screwed over by previous jobs, dissolving laptops. Yet, you have these awesome sounding free time events of going to live music, hanging out with friends all over Southern California. I have a great work life, but an awful free time life. I have two adult friends, Dennis and my fiance. I am basically asking you, how do I make adult friends?" Okay, so here's the story. This is all a facade. Whenever I do something cool.
Yeah, I was like going to say, these people think you have it way more together than you do.
Than I do. Well, whenever I do something fun, like I go to a concert, or I go whatever, I hang out with my friends, I make a note to remember it specifically for the podcast because I have to fill up the front of the show with something. So even if just something dumb happens to me at work and it's like a non-moment of my life, I can kind of dress it up like a story and make it feel like something it's more than it is. The reality of my life is I will often go weeks without seeing other human beings besides the ones I have to see at work. That can get awfully depressing. And that's how I end up falling in love with Hot Ones, the YouTube show that everyone should be watching. And I've already gone into watching some of the episodes more than once.
So what you're saying is the crux of the show is really we don't have friends. We have movies. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe that's the new motto I'll put on the masthead. We don't have friends. We have movies.
Well, honestly, like this, that like you guys are my friends. Like I don't have like boys nights or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I used to go online and play online shoot 'em ups with people.
Okay,
like this is my social interaction.
You're welcome.
So start a podcast.
Well, he started too, so he's doing it exactly right.
I'm not sure because that's like that's like something they actually like have books on now is about how specifically males. In modern life have a hard time making and keeping friends because of our bullshit macho whatever stuff. I don't know if that's completely it or we just kind of fill our lives up with YouTube videos and everything like that. You're my friend, Patrick. I love you. I love you, buddy.
We're your friends. Well, there is some truth to that. As you get older, it's harder to choose who your friends are. Even if you think somebody's cool and you're like, oh, I could definitely be friends with him. We have fun talking at work or whatever. And then you realize like just at a certain age, it's like you don't really get to make that choice anymore. Even if you're like, hey, let's hang out. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to like become a real
friendship.
Shared
experience does a lot.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. History, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like most of my adult friends I met through doing improv, which is like martial arts.
Stop.
Like, that's how I met my wife was through improv, and all of my friends here in San Diego I met through doing the show Tonight in San Diego, and I don't really hang out with most of them outside of the show. So I think it's okay to just have a couple close friends and then have work friends. If you want more, take an improv class or something. I don't know.
I agree with the history thing. Like, it's harder too, because when you like grow up with somebody, and if you do establish, like we did establish really good friendship, right in high school and right outside of high school. And our little friend, and so we have that kind of, we know where each other came from kind of thing. Sometimes we might get aggravated or whatever, or flip each other off through the microphone or whatever, but we love each other. But
doing it right now.
Well, how I made my newest friend is I literally made them with my loins. So what you do is you get a woman and you impregnate her. And then in 9 months you have a new friend, but it's a very one-sided friendship. I will say that.
This is like some creepy Michael Fassbender in a cave situation.
Yeah, I know, isn't it?
The way you described this.
I tried my best.
Okay, for all, and I feel like we kind of touched on this a little. What is the future of film? I understand that is always an undercurrent of the show and the industry as a whole, but what do you think the future of movies will be in 10 to 20 years? We have talked about this at great length, especially early on in Jabber and Drone 2.0.
20 years. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, it sounded like you had more of an answer, but...
I was going to say it's going to be digital-only online streaming content of people farting on trampolines with cats. I think the thing about film is it comes in trends. It comes and goes. There's talk that the movie theater system is going to go away. I don't think that's ever going to happen, short of nuclear holocaust or natural disasters scouring us from the earth, which will eventually happen and soon, well, not soon, but in a long time, the sun will explode and, the heat death of the universe will eventually overtake us all. So that's the future of film. Nothingness. Nihilism.
Blackness.
You're not wrong, kind of.
I think that the way I kind of see it in 10 to 20 years, I think the disparity between the big films and the small films is just going to grow more and more. And I think, the theater experience, I think a lot of smaller theaters are going to close. Sorry, that's just going to happen. And I think that your AMCs and your Cinemarks and stuff are going to pretty much essentially be vehicles for stuff like Avengers. And that's about it. You might maybe some like horror programmers at the beginning of the year or something like that, but stuff that can really guarantee will make a profit. I think they're going to take less and less chances. However, I do think that the digital market is going to expand and fracture in really interesting ways. And I think that coupled with the fact that people can now make films on the cheap, people being able to, like Sean Baker, who made an entire film on an iPhone 5 when he made Tangerine. I think with that, I am hopeful that a new generation is going to be so interested in the technology of filmmaking and the technology, the cheap technology added to the digital marketplace growing, that we could see an entire indie revolution, like almost something like we saw in the late 80s, early 90s in the digital age, without like a lot of reference to an older generation, just people doing it themselves.
I think that needs to become more of a standard for film to grow as an art, if we're talking in like that kind of a standpoint. I don't know. I could also see cinema kind of becoming more and more of a joke and less of a thing. They are doing reruns at even AMCs and stuff like that. They'll have like come out to a Life is Wonderful Day or whatever, and they show it for like 2 days or whatever. I think that might happen.
AMC is just showing Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, I think that might happen more and more too. But for 20, 30 years, that's hard, because I think, if we're talking like what's big in the zeitgeist, I think video games have taken over in a lot more than like academic culture and a lot of that kind of people are willing to.
VRs, we're going to see a lot of interesting stuff happen. Well, I mean,
it could go weirder than that, because I don't know if virtual reality is going to be enough, because we're even talking about Neuralinks and crazy shit like that. Like, I don't think I don't think people realize that, you know, I've even had the thought that maybe the reason why films aren't as violent for a while is because we had video games that were so ultra violent that that people were getting satiated by video games in that way. I don't completely know, but I don't, the technology will continue and it will change. And I don't know if even cinema will be the same as we think about it now. So it's a hard thing to call, especially if we're talking 20 to 30 years from now.
Heat Death of the Universe aside, I think there might be a little bit of a swing back.
I think a nostalgic way, like Records, but I don't think...
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I mean. But I also think the big blockbuster bubble is going to pop a little bit. Because, you know, we already see it in years like 2016, where companies invest all this money on these tent poles that don't bring in the money, that don't do well. So I think we have all these studios right now competing for the big summer dollars or the, you know... And it's getting to where the studios can't predict what's going to be a hit anymore.
Well, it's gotten to a point where it's kind of like movie gambling, where you're betting it all on black. And
exactly. And so I think eventually that's going to bankrupt some studios.
And it has, you know, gotten... We've talked about
studios like Sony in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So studios will conglomerate.
I don't think cinema will exist
the way it does now, but it's not going to go away.
Well, again, it's short story versus, you know, a book, you know?
Yeah. Right.
It's going to get to the point where like good movies are still told, but I think we're going as humans. It's either going to go all downhill and it's going to go be very aggressive, or it's going to go beyond what our little minds think, because even now we kind of look past the fact that we have just an enormous amount of technology in our pockets and smartphones and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. So, oh, for sure.
I don't know. Cinema could be like a weird, maybe they'll have like a weird Pokemon Go cinema kind of thing where you experience it together and go out in the world, and there could be all sorts of weird stuff. So
I do think, it wouldn't be surprised if eventually a lot of the talent starts leaving TV and goes back to movies, because TV is getting so saturated that it's getting harder and harder to get noticed in TV. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing more.
Well, I think you're seeing right now is people doing both. So they can go, it's like them doing their small film versus them. I mean, even actors at this point, not just directors like we were talking, but even actors are kind of doing, you know, a little indie kind of TV show and then going up and doing a big superhero-y thing. So
exactly. Sure. So I don't know. Who knows? Hopefully we're all still alive.
Okay, that's the show. And thank you, everybody, who sent in questions.
Yes,
and thank you, everybody, who's listened to us for 200 ridiculous episodes. And thank you, Richard, for coming back to the show.
You're welcome.
To do our episode 200 with us. And I will give you the floor first. What do you want to promote? Do you have anything? A website? A zine?
Well, my website should be updated soon. We'll see, because I'm a lazy ass and very tired lately. But that website is rdwally.weebly.com. So check that out. But what's going to be updated is I'm going to get one of my first short stories published in a series called... Horror in 16 Bits, or no, Terror in 16 Bits. It's coming out through Muzzleland Press. What the short story collection is about basically it's kind of like it harkens to a lot of that early video game horror. And it could go anything from like Resident Evil to Castlevania or like and different things like that. So it should be a really fun collection. The person that put it together, Jonathan Rabb, is an editor, again, he and owner of Muzzleland Press, like I said. But he specifically, he tried to put a lot of newcomers with oldcomers. And there's some like mid-level guys that like Oren Gray and some other really good horror authors. So I check it out. I think it's going to be really cool.
Sounds cool.
So
cool. Congrats.
Hey, yeah, totally.
Thank you.
Do you have like a projected date of... You know, how long from now
will
that happen?
He wants it out by Necronomicon, which is, I believe it's in July. So it will be coming out sometime in July, is when he's going to do the full like run out and everything with it.
Cool. And we'll promote it on our Facebook page and on Twitter.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, Keith, what's your stuff?
Tonight in San Diego's back. We've started filming Mondays. If you happen to be listening and you're in the San Diego area and you haven't come to this show, come. It's better live. It's a lot of fun, and it really helps us out a lot to have a live audience. That helps us out a lot. But if you can't make it, that's cool too. Watch it online. Go to nightinsandiego.com. Follow it on Twitter, Instagram, all that. You can follow me on Twitter, Keith Foster Kid. You can follow me on Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. And that's all for now.
Okay, cool. And people can buy the live tickets off the Tonight in San Diego website, right?
Mm-hmm.
And find out where it is and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're interested, just also hit me up. I mean, if you're interested, go and just send me a message. I'll get you some fucking comps. It's easy. I'm the co-host. I know a guy. I can get you in. I can get you in the door. Just come to the show.
Okay. Now you're channeling Mark Wahlberg. Okay.
Say hi to your mother for me, donkey.
It's a transformer. Yeah. Okay. So you can find us at jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. That's our regular RSS feed. And you can subscribe to us there. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Pocket Cast, Player.fm, Google Play, all the places. And you can also read my reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladworkreviews.blogspot.com. You can follow me at BC Cassidy. You can follow the show at Jabber Podcast. And
I feel like as much as you make fun of the name of the show, Jabber and the Drone, I feel like it's better than your Twitter handle.
Well, that goes back. That came off of my old YouTube handle.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have friends who do podcasts. So much of the people who sent us questions. So Rod and Denise at the Listening Party, you should go listen to them. You should also listen to Denise's The Mascot Diaries. She's posting new episodes as well. You should listen to Patrick's Make Dad Read Comics, which Keith may or may not appear on in the near future.
No, it's going to happen.
And Almost Educational.
I like both the shows, but I really, sometimes I can really get into that one because it's just, his dad is so funny.
And his dad's really funny.
My favorite one, and I would say a good jumping on point for anybody who's interested in Make Dad Read Comics, I think it was the first one I listened to, was their Akira episode. And his dad kept calling the weird mutant children ghosts.
I mean, to be fair, would that happen?
I mean, that's,
it makes sense, but it doesn't.
That's jumping in on the deep end for sure. Yeah. Okay, that's it. So we'll talk to you next week, Keith.
Well, now I don't know if we should give it to Gosling. I don't want things to get boring.
Give it to Michael Fassbender in a cave playing with the flute with himself.
No, I'll give it to Gosling.
Okay. Have a good one, guys.
Bye.
Bye.